honorable members, we are officially commencing our meeting. No. Alright, as you know, honorable members, that our chairperson, honorable Joe Fabs, is still not well. I had a long conversation with her yesterday. I think that she did go for the check-up and then she'll be going for an op next week. So I think that each and every one of us must always care for her so that she can have a speedy recovery. But she's not the only one in the committee that is having an ailment. She's also Mr. Marais, who's also the member of this committee, a regular member of this committee, is also still not well after an op. Let's hope that they get a speedy recovery as soon as possible, that they can come back and join us. Because the work we're doing here is so important that we need each and everyone's strength and mind to do the work. Honorable Andrew, sir.
I want to reiterate and support your wishes for those two people. Can I ask that we ask the committee clerk to get well cards, so that we can hopefully still circulate it today for the committee members to sign, and then also ask the clerk to submit this to these two members of the committee.
Honorable Mabasa.
Yeah, I'm seconding that good motion from Andriques, Honorable Andriques.
So I think it's taken. I think we must get it before we leave, you know? Yeah. So the post office here, we can get something quickly.
Yeah.
Because really, in Zulu we say that you don't only work with the people when everything is fine. When someone is down, then that he or she needs to support. Yeah, I think that's what we must do. Honorable members, without a waste of time, well, today we are going to have two presentations. One from the National Lottery Board, and the other one from the Department itself, the GTI. So today we are having a delegation from the National Lottery Board, who is the chairperson. I think the delegation is led by the chairperson, who is Professor Nebuchanda, the brand new chairperson we appointed last year. Let us see how the new groom is sitting.
What's wrong with the
issue? Yeah, we are having a brand new chairperson. And then it's also a brand new room. Let's just let him greet us and introduce his delegation for us.
Honorable Chairperson, the August House, I am Professor Njelezin Alfred Nutanda, the new chairperson of the National Lottery Board. First of all, let me say thank you very much for the hard work that you did, which was the actualization of the kind delegation that the Minister of Trade and Industry entrusted to make sure that at least entities like National Lottery Board does act like any other entities in the Republic of South Africa. I underwent your, as I said that day, to the chairperson of the day, Ms. Fab, that I was so interrogated that I felt maybe this cup is very big. I may not discharge my functions well, but anyhow, she assured me that it was not an interrogation, but it was an exchange of views. Thank you very much. Most of you were there, and I'm saying we are here today as the National Lotteries Board, together with the Department of Trade and Industry. I must assure you, Chairperson, that the appointment was pronounced on the 2nd of December, and I think I was very close to the offices of the National Lottery Board, because the distributing agency of Arts, Culture, National Heritage was somewhere on station. I didn't waste time, I took office. And because sometimes if you don't take office the moment you are appointed, somebody can unseat you. We are mindful of the fact that the legislators wanted the NDC to deliver, not only to waste money. We have started with our work, and I think during the course of this week and next week, you are going to get the roster that indicates that all those problems that you have been worrying about, complaining about, where distributing agencies and National Lottery Board don't see eye to eye or don't sit together. That is a thing of the past. Distributing agencies are free to consult the chairperson of the board and the members of the board. The public is free to phone and even to travel to come and sit with the chairperson of the board and ask issues that they are not happy with. So we are here today to tell you and to report to you that you have given us men and women who are capable of the task. Everybody that you have sanctioned to be in the National Lottery Board, according to my assessment, they are ready. They are very ready. We have already had 2 board meetings, and we are going to have a strategic session wherein the whole board and the department, together with the officials of the National Lottery Board, including chairperson and deputy chairperson of each distributing agency, we are going to have our own endeavor to look at how best can we make sure that the money that is there gets to where it matters most, so that at least we, you know, we allay the fear that the public is having. And even the turnaround strategy that we are trying to develop is such that we believe people will no longer wait for so many days. So this is just my introduction to this August House today. The National Lottery Board is here to deliver, and no stone will be left unturned. Anyone who does not deliver is not fit to be part of the National Lottery Board. And we urge the legislators to scrutinize whatever amendment of the act or regulation, so that at least it be in line with what you have been thinking all along. With a few words, chairperson of the day, members of the committee, I'm with a professor, Reverend Ram, who is the CEO, who will take us through in the presentation. And we, as you said, we are having 2 presentations. The GCI, we have Nomfundo and Mpo, who will take us through on the presentation. And I must say, much of what the 2 entities are going to present, it's not that we are meeting here for the first time. We have been meeting, we have agreed on a lot of commonalities that we think this body can function efficiently and effectively. With this view, let me rest my case. Wherever you need me to comment, I'll do so according to your instruction. I thank you.
All right, thank you, Prof. I think that the members of the committee, we really have to appreciate the enthusiasm which is shown by the new National Lottery Board. It means that the work which you put in last year was not in vain. But as we said, that the proof is always in the issue of the pudding. Let's wait for the work. Let's see the program, and let's see the distribution of the funds to the needy people there on the ground. I think that's how we're going to trust you. So we appreciate that you're so enthusiastic, that you're also going to go for the induction and a workshop. But what is also critical is the issue of the coordination between yourself and the department. because you know the department is always our point of entry in access to you. But I think that the left hand side must know what the right hand side is doing. I think that one is critical. So without a waste of time, I'll request the Professor Ram to just hit the road running.
Thank you, Chairperson. As the Professor said earlier, we have two presentations. So what we're doing is providing an overview of what the board does with special reference to the distribution and the GTI presentation. And we will also raise some of the challenges that we have. And the GTI presentation will focus on how those challenges are going to be addressed. So the presentation is divided into four brief sections. We'll give you a brief organizational background because we think there's a misperception that the primary function of the National Lottery Board is to distribute money, when in fact it is a regulator and its primary function is to regulate the National Lottery. And I think that doesn't come out very clearly, and we're going to spend just a few slides and a few minutes looking at how everything fits together before we focus specifically on the distribution. So then we will look at the distribution and the activities, and we will raise some of the challenges that we have, some of which you're aware of through your previous interactions with the board and obviously what we read in the media. And then we touch on some of the interventions which we've already implemented, and obviously some of the more serious structural ones will be handled by the GTI presentation. So this is just the mission of the board, which is derived from the National Lotteries Act. And really, it is to ensure that the National Lottery and other lotteries are run with the utmost integrity, that interests of all players are protected, that the National Lottery generates maximum revenues for good causes in a responsible way, and that these revenues are dispersed equitably and expeditiously. We obviously owe our existence to the National Lotteries Act, and apart from many other things, it establishes the board, as you are aware, since you appointed the new board last year. It sets up the process for awarding the license to operate the National Lottery, and then importantly, it sets up the National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund. This is the fund where all the revenues from the lottery, as prescribed by the license, are actually held. The Act also sets up the distribution agencies and what the functions are and how they actually work. And the Act also makes provision for the board to regulate other lotteries, promotional competitions, for example, and private and society lotteries. And then the functions of the board, which also from the Act, is to advise the minister on the issuing of the lottery license, on the percentages that are allocated to the different good causes, arts, culture, national heritage, charities, and sports, and also to advise the minister on the efficacy of legislation. And then the other things, as we said before, from the Act, so we will just skip that quickly. You notice that the Act does not specifically say that the board should be involved in the distribution of funds from the NLVTS, but the Act does make a provision for the minister to allocate any other duty to the board. And one of these duties allocated by Minister Irwin in 2000 was for the National Lottery Board to take over the administration of the distribution of the funds. So the board does not really make the decision as to who gets funding, but the board provides the administrative support for this whole process. And we'll see that later on in the diagram. So having been given that additional task, we find that the board is now almost two organizations in one, which is the regulator, and one which is the support function for the distribution. And we find that in practice, it's almost 9/10 of our work is more confined or focused on the distribution rather than the regulation. Not that we're ignoring the regulation, but that's just how it has turned out. So if we look at this diagrammatically, this diagram kind of gives you the structure. So we have a little square which has the two sort of pseudo-organizations in one. The regulatory side, we regulate the National Lottery, which is operated by a private company, through a very comprehensive and elaborate license. And on the other side, the National Lotteries Board are the trustees of the NLVTF, where all the funds are held. The minister has appointed a distributing agency, sorry for the abbreviation, DA means the distributing agency. So we have one arts and culture and charities and sport. There is a defunct distributing agency for the RDP, which is still in the Act in its current form, which needs to be taken out in the next amendment. And then there's a distributing agency for miscellaneous category, which is meant to catch areas which the other three agencies do not. So what actually happens in practice is that the operator of the national lottery on a weekly basis reconciles the sales for that week and then does a transfer into the NLDTS. At the moment, it's about 22 or 25 million rand a week. And that depends obviously on the sales of the lottery for that week. In the weeks where the jackpots are rolled, like you're probably aware, that contribution could go up as much as 30 million per week. The board then recommends to the minister what percentage of that fund in any one year is allocated to each of these agencies, and that percentage is gazetted. And currently it sits at 45%, which is really the lion's share to welfare, 28% to arts and culture, and 22% to sport, and just 5% to miscellaneous. If we now have a look at the overview of the distribution, the actual application process happens as shown in the diagram. Each of the distributing agencies has a kind of a policy workshop, and they decide what they want to fund for that particular year. They then articulate those requirements in an advert, which we then publish in all the major newspapers, and it's translated into other languages and also on radio. And then the applicants, which are generally NGOs and CBOs, but sometimes schools and sometimes municipalities, look at the advert and the requirements to see if they qualify, and then they would submit an application to the National Lottery Board, because the distributing agencies are part-time. They do not have an office, and they meet once or twice a month. And when they do meet, it is the duty of the board, function of the board, to prepare all these applications and to summarize them and then to pass them on to the distributing agencies when they meet. They then make an adjudication and decide which ones they will fund, which ones they will reject. And those red lines are then directions to the board to authorize payment to the beneficiaries from the fund. The current funding focus for these three different agencies, for charities at the moment, is capacity building, poverty alleviation, community and residential programs, for all those things. For arts, culture and heritage, it's a major project, national significance, so the refurbishment of monuments and historic buildings, festivals, public art, and there's a lot of capacity building in the arts focus as well. The sports focus currently is also capacity building for people that are involved in sports, managers and coaches, equipment and kits for teams, and these are also for schools, upgrading of sports facilities, also school grounds and bigger facilities. And then also a major portion of the funding is for preparation and attendance at Olympic Games, the Commonwealth Games, the All Africa Games, and other events such as that, the Disabled Games. So once a NGO or a CBO sees the advert and decides that they will make an application, this is what happens internally at the board. So applications are made which come into the board, and obviously there's a whole lot of compliance activity that we check for completeness and all those things. All the applications are then scanned, because essentially the whole cycle is paperless. It then is prepared by the staff of the board for adjudication by the distributing agencies, and then obviously if it's agreed by the agency that they would fund, we then get a direction from them. We prepare a contract or a grant agreement, which is then sent out to the beneficiary, who signs it and gives us confirmation of the banking accounts and signatories and all of that, and then the payment goes out. We can come back to this process if you have more specific questions about timing and all those kinds of things, which are problematic at the moment. This is the output of the agencies, and this is one of the problems that we have. If we just go back to the previous slide, you will see that the adjudication by the agencies, because they are part-time and they meet once or twice a week, that kind of forms a bit of a bottleneck, because the most productive agency, which is the charities agency, do about 132 applications per session. So if they're meeting twice a month, they're doing 260.
Now, if you do encounter the 60 applications at this stage, it means that even if you prepare 1,000 down the line, yes, it's not going to be
it's not going to be handled.
So that's one of the issues that we're currently looking at. And if we go back to the slide that we were at, you can see the productivity, if you like, of the different agencies. So charities, on a three-day session that they meet, they will do 132, they meet twice a month. So this is more or less what they do a year, and this is more or less what we get in a year.
So there's always at least 1,000 applications more that we get in a year that we can actually handle.
And this is why we have... So conceivably, you can have an application which is sitting there for 14 months before it even gets looked at. So this is one of the issues that we're trying to resolve. And these are the other statistics for the other sectors. If we move on, this is some of the activity that we have from the time that we started. And you can see that it's in the 9 years that we've been operating, we've disbursed a total of 6.7 billion, ran in those various categories. And copies of this is in your presentation in case you need to look at the figures in more detail and maybe to query them. Apologies. This is again one of the issues. The provincial spread, if you look at the funding, the historical funding, and this is for the last financial year, and every financial year is more or less the same. The lion's share of the money is in Gauteng and the Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. Very little money relatively goes up to the poorer provinces. And the reason for that is that in many cases the applications that come from those poorer provinces are not of good quality. And in many cases the requirements are not quite understood by the agencies. This is one of the other areas that we are also currently looking at. This is the money that is currently in the NLDGS. Now this has been quite a controversial issue because there's been figures bandied around in the media that there is a surplus of 4.9 million and all of that. Effectively, we have 6.2 billion in the fund at the moment. 2.5 billion of that is already being earmarked for beneficiaries. So if an organization applies for 30 million over 3 years and that grant is made, it means that we give out 10 million in 1 year and the 20 million that has to be given out in the subsequent years are also in that figure. So 2.5 billion of that is tranches that are earmarked for beneficiaries, provided that they meet the requirements of successfully spending their previous tranches and all of that. So effectively, there's about, if you take the 2.5 million out there, there's about 4, just under 4 million that is in the fund. Now, 1.5 billion of that is current revenue. So if you take that out, there's about 2 billion really that is in the fund, which everybody says is a surplus, but it's extremely difficult for us to spend that money unless some of the severe statutory constraints are removed. So 1.5 billion that I say we should take out, which is the current revenue, just to give you a little background, in the year 2000 when the lottery actually started, the lottery started selling tickets in March 2000, and around August, the minister, then Minister Alec Owens, was getting a whole lot of queries from NGOs and CBOs about when the lottery money would actually start to flow out. And in his address to Parliament later on in 2000, he said that it was government's intention at the time to try and build up a surplus of revenue for at least 1 year so that we have some cushion in the event that something goes wrong. And as it happened in 2007, the lottery license was set aside because of the issue with the political office bearer. If you remember, there was an issue that Comrade Max Isuru was a shareholder of a shareholder of a shareholder, and and also Honorable Naledi Pandor was a shareholder of a shareholder, and that was an issue for the judge, and he set aside the license. And when that happened, we didn't have a lottery for 6 months. And we lost essentially about R500 million to the NLDC. So if we don't really have a cushion of about R1 billion and something does go wrong, it means that we may find ourselves without any revenue to disperse. If we look at how much it costs us to disburse the money, at the moment it's about 5%. So for every million rand that we disburse, 50,000 of that is what it costs us to disburse it. So for 100 million rand, it will be 5 million. If we compare it to other funders, in the United Kingdom, the lottery funder, it costs them 10 million, sorry, 10%, so 10 million for every 100 million. And closer to home, the NDA, National Development Agency, spends about 15%, which is 15 million for 100 million. What this tells you is that there is room to do lots of other things to expand the activities of the board without making it overly expensive, relatively to other funders. So that's really the background of how everything works, and we want to move on to things that I think are more important for you, and these are some of the challenges that we have. And we've grouped them into four different categories, the funding model and the governance, the adjudication of applications, and also administration. And as I said before, the DTI presentation will look at some of these in more detail, especially when it comes to legislative amendments. The problems we have with the funding model is that currently the Act specifies that it is application-based, which means that to get money you have to put in an application. What that means is that if there's a tornado in Boa or flooding in Cape Town or a serious fire, which is a severe disaster and there's no money, we heard recently the education department was running around looking for 10 million rand to get portable classrooms for some of these schools so that they could start. We can't fund that because without an application, the Auditor General would then jump on us because that's not how the process is specified in the Act. So that's one of the issues. That we need to have a serious look at how that model is couched in the amendment. The other issue that we have is that the requirements are quite rigorous. So effectively what it means is that you have to have money in order to get more money from us because you need the audited financial statements, you need the record keeping, you need all the fancy things which the fancy organizations have. And what it effectively means is that those organizations that don't really need the money are actually getting the money, and the really dire organizations are not. The other issue that we have is that the impact that we achieve with the money, so the 6.2 billion that we've disbursed, 6.7 billion that we've disbursed, we did a small-scale impact study a few years ago, and what it showed is that the money is used to allow organizations to continue existing. That's more or less what the money is doing. So there's no real significant impact that says, excuse me, that we've created so many new jobs or that we've done other social changes that are significant and required. We said that the distributing agencies meet and decide what they will fund for a particular year. In many cases, that has no alignment with what the national requirements are, what government's priorities are. So because they are kind of in areas themselves, the focus seems to be in those areas. So sometimes we're not funding what we should be funding, and sometimes we're funding, if we go to the next bullet, we duplicate funding. So we're funding what the National Department of Welfare is doing, we fund what the National Department of Arts is funding, and sometimes we fund two organizations in the same street doing the same sort of thing. In some cases, we give 10 million to a project that probably requires 1.5. So these are some of the issues that we have. And then the high number of rejections is also an issue. It's about 66% at the moment. And that's because, as I said earlier, some of the applicants don't really understand the requirements, some of them don't meet the requirements, and then there's also the quality of the application, which needs to be looked at. This is also the reason why the disbursement is not as expensive as it could be. If we didn't have the 66% rejections, we probably wouldn't have as much of a surplus as we have at the moment. Issues of governance, and this I think is of primary concern and is the root cause really of the tension between the board, the previously existing board and the distributing agencies. And the issue is that the board is accountable to Parliament for the money in the NLDTF, but the board really has no say about how that money is spent. So the distributing agencies disburse the money, but they're not accountable for the money that they disburse, they're not audited, And we have some serious conflicts of interest on some of the agencies. There's no mechanism formally for a review and appeal. If you're an applicant and you've applied for funding and somebody similar to you has also applied and that somebody else has got funding and you haven't, you can't really appeal. So all they do is they either appeal to the board or they appeal to the minister. And really, we can't really do anything about it because we have no statutory authority and we cannot overturn the decision that's made by the distributing agency. So that also is an issue. And then the mechanism for oversight. There's no formal mechanism that looks at the adjudication to see whether it's consistent, whether it's ready for money, whether there's conflict of interest. None of that exists formally, so that's an area that needs to be concerned as well. To give you an example of the governance issue, there was an article on the 27th of January, so a few weeks ago, in the Natal newspaper, which shows, and it says there, headline is, audit show waste of hundreds of millions of taxpayers' money. And if you go further, it says there, the money that they mention is correctional services, 344 million, and right down at the bottom, the National Lotteries Board spent 5.7 million rand in irregular or wasteful ways. So that's the headline. And if you look at our audited statements, which you obviously have seen a copy when it was distributed, this is the annual financial statement, and this is the note on the irregular expenditure, and you can see the 5.7 million is there. And if you read the auditor general's note, it says, 8 cases were reported as not having met the conditions of government notice R182, and that the distributing agencies on a discretionary basis overrode the necessary conditions. Now, this obviously is reflected in the board's annual financial statement. So when somebody reads the article, they think, well, you know, it's the board or the CEO or someone that has incurred the irregular expenditure. And if you look at the previous year, it was 22 million, so at least it's come down to 5.7. But it's still a note in the annual report, which is a blemish for the board and not a fault of the board. We move on to the next group, which is challenges that we face under adjudication. Now, the Lotteries Act makes provision for the minister to give direction to the distributing agencies when he appoints them. But since we've started, the distributing agency has not received such direction. So in the absence of a direction and the absence of policy, as we mentioned, they kind of develop their own policy. And some of it is good and some of it is not properly aligned and may not be getting the best value for money for the fund. Sometimes we see in practice the adjudication is inconsistent, so you get two identical applications. The one will be funded, the other one will not. And if the other one appeals, there's no defensible way if that application is reviewed to say why it was funded, because there is no formal scoring mechanism. It's just a decision that's made. So if you look at the minutes say, the agency considered the application and decided to fund. So there's nothing that says they looked at the impact, they looked at, well, obviously they would look at the budget, but there is no detailed, formalized, consistent approach to the adjudication. So the next bullet says it's not defensible. So if there is a review under PAJA, it will be very difficult for that review body, if there is one, to say why this one was funded and the other one wasn't, without calling the agencies and then for them to remember what exactly it was. There's no relative assessment. What this means is, if you look at the way the National Arts Council works, they have a very small budget, which is like 80 million rand a year, but they invite applications, and then they take all the applications, put them on the table, and they have subcommittees that look at the applications, and then they prioritize, and they give the ones that have the most merit the money, and whatever's left, and they will try and divide amongst the rest. With us, it's a first-come, first-served thing. So if we get an application that comes in, and it looks like it has merit, and it gets funding, and it gets funding, and then the funding is finished, and then we got really good applications at the end, obviously they would have to be rejected because there's no money. So the relative assessment to see, you know, from all the applications, and because of the volume, I think that is quite a difficult task, and it needs to be considered quite seriously to have some sort of a solution. No discrimination between large and small grants. So there's a precise form which you put in when you apply for money. The distributing agencies use the same form to give a grant of 10,000, and they use the same form to give a grant of 60 million. So there's no real discrimination. That's for a really large grant that you need additional input from an expert or something like that, maybe more detailed budget or anything. None of that actually happens. So the same amount of information really is used to give a 60 million rand grant and a 10,000 rand grant. If we move on to the issues we have with administration, as I said earlier, we have a high volume of applications, and this is tied into currently we have a batch process, and which means that we have a closing date. So just before the closing date, we have this peak, and we have all these thousands of applications that hit us, and then it kind of dies down until the next peak. Currently, we are in discussions with the distributing agencies and with DTI about making this application process an open-ended one, so that you can apply whenever you feel the need, and that would be considered within a fixed time. So that's all under discussion. And we have a long turnaround. I mean, this is really the issue that everybody raises, is that they wait 2 years, sometimes 18 months for a grant. And if you look at that cycle process, if your application is only going to be considered 14 months conceivably after you've applied, then I mean, it's not a surprise that, you know, the process beyond that would take another 3-4 months. So you could wait 18 months before you receive a grant. And that is tied into the next bullet, which we said is the issue of having part-time adjudication. Some of the things that are being done to alleviate some of these problems, there was an oversight committee which was an issue for the distributing agencies. They believed that it was actually undermining the authority, and that it was also taking additional time. And then under the minister's direction, this committee has been dissolved, which has improved the relationship between the board, and obviously with the new board, the relationship is really good. We have a combined forum now, which is chaired by DTI, so it's the distributing agencies, the board, and the DTI, and we've actually made quite a few strides in trying to eliminate some of the bottlenecks. The new chairperson has initiated an interdepartmental working group, so he has people from the different departments. As we said before, some of the departments don't really know what we fund, so we're duplicating projects that the department funds. For example, the Department of Arts and Culture would fund the festival, and those people will apply to us, and they wouldn't mention in there, although it is a requirement, that they receive funding. They just say they've applied, but they haven't received the funding. So we give them money, the department gives them money, so someone walks away with the excess. And then, of course, DTI is working on new regulations to try and remove some of the restrictions that we can. We've started with some process improvements. One of the examples is that we, instead of sending out the grant agreement by post, which can take 2 months, we invite applicants that are closer to the office and to our regional offices to come in and sign the grant agreement, which means that it now takes a day. Before, the distributing agencies insisted that the board staff had no authority to reject applications. So even if an application came and the form wasn't properly filled in, or they didn't give him the required documentation, the board was not allowed to reject that application. They wanted to see everything. And when we had this combined forum shared by DTI, we pressed this issue out, and then they conceded that it might be an idea that if it is not compliant with the effort, then why should it hold up the capacity of the office? And they've agreed that we could reject those things up front. So now if you apply for a pig farm, for example, in UCC, you shouldn't be considered. You don't have to wait 10 months before you get a letter to say, I'm sorry, you've been rejected. You can get that letter now within a week. So these are some of the process improvements, but as we said before, some of the severe constraints are statutory and needs to be handled through the amendment of the law. Chairperson, that's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Prof, for that input you have made here. Members of the committee, here it is in front of you, all the frustrations and the achievements which they have made. It's up to you to interrogate those things. Honorable Mabaso.
Thank you very much, Colleague Chair. I also wish to congratulate, following on your wave, colleagues there, congratulate the new leadership, the National Lottery Board. And also to wish them well. But they have done half of our task by identifying some of the things that we will be asking them in the ways of the chairperson. And also, I'm impressed with the input that we have received because it goes a long way in identifying problems. My only worry will be whether the workshop that I've planned are going to come out with solutions to these identifying problems. It is a big one because the same problems that are outlined here, that's how we are going to measure the board and its associates. Because we expect those problems to be resolved. But when I go to specifics, what is the capacity or what are the strategies of moving from province to province in pursuing what we can call trying to normalize or equalize the situation, you know, when we look at the extremes of the interpretation between provinces. And then my next question is on slide, would be about the fourth page maybe, but the one with the diagram, the one with the structure. What will account for that RDP to be a zero? Is it a policy decision? You know, is it correct? And then, how are the adverts made? I'm on the one with which says internal process, which has but how are the adverts made? Adverts to invite prospective applicants to apply, because what we had recognized was that this could become a class issue, where you find that it is only the empowered, like the report indicates, that are able to access the funds. You must have funds to be able to access funds. So how does the board intend to address that situation and improve? One but last is when we go to challenges, the incapacity that exists within the very people that should be assisted. How are such that incapacity, what is the strategy to address it? Because if it means completing forms and that poor community does not have the capacity, does not have a computer, then it means we do have a problem. My last one is this surplus that the board reported on. Does the board have a strategy so that, you know, it doesn't happen again? Because if there's one thing that worries us when we evaluate financial statements, at the end of the year, it is when we find that there is a surplus, yet there is poverty out there that stands unaddressed. Thanks, Correction.
All right, thank you, Honorable Mabasa. A person has just gone through this one of the TTI, the presentation of the TTI. You find that some of the challenges which are being raised in this input are being addressed here. So what if I say that those questions which you have asked, let us have them, and then allow the TTI to put their presentation on, and then see whether they are not addressing everything which you have raised, so that we can finish quicker, if possible. Is TTI ready?
Yes, we are ready, Chairperson.
That's
what we're going to come immediately after them, because the questions will overlap.
Yeah. So you can just teach us.
Thank you, Chair. We'll get straight to the presentation. We won't waste time. Our presentation really is looking at the challenges that we have identified together with the NLD as well as the distributing agency in a series of meetings that we've had last year, some of them that were had by our minister, and the proposed solutions to some of the problems that were identified. And what we'll do is also just give you an update in terms of progress that has been made in some of the problems and the proposed solutions. This slide in terms of the background really is trying to give a view of the institutions, of the structural institutions that are established in terms of this legislation. I think what is critical there is the interaction and the relationship between these institutions that are recognized in the legislation. And when I talk about the interaction, what is important there for noting, and which is something that then triggers some of these problems, is the level of accountability by each of these different institutions in terms of their functions in the legislation. For example, if you look at the fund, the Act is very specific that it gives the NLD the power to administer that fund and to invest that fund in a fund. At the same time, the Act establishes the distributing agencies. The distributing agencies are the ones who will then determine who are the beneficiaries if this fund, a portion of this fund, must be allocated to specific beneficiaries. So, then it means that the energy as the trustee of the fund must then get a decision from the DA to then implement in a way or to discharge the funds from the NLCTF. And obviously, when you look at the NLD, there are corporate governance issues in terms of the management and the administration of that fund. But then when you come to the DA or the distributing agencies, it is not very clear in the legislation what are the levels of accountability and the corporate governance issues. Then when you move on again in the legislation, just to talk again about the issues of corporate governance, later on in another section, it will then say, give the minister power, for example, where the money is likely to be utilized for unlawful purpose, that the minister may then prohibit the utilization of that fund. So I think it's very important right at the beginning to just outline those relationships and the institutions that are established. There's also the different categories of the distributing agencies. And I think that the question about the zero that is allocated on the RDP, I think we need to revisit that particular category because the legislation that establishes the RDP does not exist. So it's one of the areas that we have identified to say, looking at the intention of these allocations, maybe we need to revisit the categories that are currently recognized in the legislation and see whether we still want to maintain the same or want to amend, remove some and maybe put in some. But we must be very clear if, for example, we want to get into the area of education, what aspect of education we would like to incorporate as part of the distributing agency. What is also important here in terms of trying to capture the purpose of this fund, and it's something that Vivek mentioned in terms of the framework or the direction by the minister, that the Act empowers the minister to actually advise the DA as to where the money should be channeled, and the purpose for utilization of that money, and the persons who must actually achieve that money. The legislation is very specific on that. And the minister provides that kind of direction. the minister must take into account specific factors. Such factors, they relate to general development in the Republic. Those are specific words that are actually used in the legislation. And some of those aspects that must be taken into account for purposes of general development is the standard of living, to improve the standard of living of the community. And also to take into account the financial and socio-economic needs of the provinces and the local, and the number of tickets that are sold per province. Those are specific factors that must be taken into account when the minister issues a direction as to how the money is supposed to be allocated. This slide is slightly outdated in the sense that the current fund now sits at 6.2 billion. That was just the figure in 2008-2009, but the deck already gave the current figure in terms of the size and the value of the fund. This slide talks through the problems that we have identified. The problems that we have identified, some of them, they actually require rectification by way of regulation, things that the minister can actually do by way of regulation so that they don't wait for amendments into the legislation. And some of them actually are administrative problems that can be resolved between the National Lottery Board and the distributing agencies in terms of the internal processes and the support that is required by the distributing agencies in terms of making assessments for the applications and adjudicate over the applications that they have received. Some of these problems, let me start off with the administrative problems, because those ones are problems that are addressed through the subcommittee that is headed by the CCI. There's a number of them. The first one, you would have seen in the slide from the NLB's presentation, they're talking about the Central Application Unit. And that function is currently assigned to NLB. And he stated that it was assigned by the former Minister of Trade and Industry. It's a support that is provided by NLB for the distributing agencies. When the applications are received, they have to screen the applications just to check whether the basic documents and basic information and the purpose of application, all of that information is there when they receive the application. So that is the first one. The problem there with that kind of support, we have been advised that there's a problem with the high turnover of staff there. People who are actually supposed to screen, because you need a level of skill. You have to know exactly what to look for when you receive those applications, so that you are able to say this application meets at least the basic requirements, and then you shortlist the screen and you put it through. There's a problem with the high turnover, and they also say that people who actually screen through those things, they don't have the necessary knowledge and the proper training as to how they're supposed to do that kind of screening. And then that's why you end up then having applications that then reaches the distributing agent stage, where some of the information is not there, and then once they say, okay, this application is applicant is eligible for the grant, and then it gets to the NLB, and then there it gets there, they say, no, you missed out, this information is not there, it's missing. So there were those kinds of problems that we thought they could have been resolved by way of a capacitating, for example, that central application unit. So there's training that is required. There's also no dedicated resources that are assigned to that. That was the problem that was identified. So the proposal there was that we need to capacitate that central application unit, put the necessary resources so that the process can move smoothly. The other problem that was identified is the loss of documents. In terms of the catering, when the applications are received, sometimes there's lots of documents, the way documents are handled and managed. That was like another problem that was identified. So we needed to pay attention to that as well. And again, because the turnaround time, they take more than 2 years. You know, when we receive these applications, because the calls, again, they are made once a year. There is no mechanism where calls can actually be received on a regular basis, so that you don't then receive a bulk that you have to go through it, and it will take you a year to actually complete accessing that bulk of applications. So if we could have a situation where we can allow, you know, applications to come through and then they can access them as they come in. So we thought that would assist a lot if we could allow that situation, as opposed to make calls once a year. But we then need to assess the need for resources that would be required to then be able to handle those applications that exist throughout the year. The other problem that was identified, it's in relation to inadequate communication between the distributing agencies and the NLD. Obviously, the NLD will raise concerns around the issues relating to corporate governance and accountability on their part. Now, if they query, for example, the basis for an adjudication decision made by the DA, there was no process in which they can go back, you know, a formal process where they would say, you know, we do not want to delay the processing of this application. There was no problem of saying, let's go back to the DA because it's got a query in this particular application. So we would therefore not process it for what we call the payment. Although the DA has made a decision to say, we think that a payment must be made here, there must be a grant agreement that is concluded with the applicant, because we think that the applicant is suitable for this grant. So there was no formal mechanism of ensuring that they make an inquiry to go back and say, this is just a small thing, let's deal with this. How did you arrive at this? Or this is our concern. Let's deal with it. So that it doesn't take a number of days, so that the grant agreement can be concluded quickly, and then the monies are dispersed accordingly. So there was no adequate communication. And also the grant agreement as well, the turnaround times around concluding of the grant agreement, they said it took almost 2 years to actually conclude the grant agreement with the applicant. So those are the administrative problems that were actually identified. And we, through this subcommittee that is chaired by the DCI, we try to identify, you know, what exactly are the causes for those problems and how we can actually eliminate some of those problems. Some of the problems, and I'll move quickly on this one, some of the problems, they require legislative amendments, particularly the problem of the inherent structural arrangement, which then borders on the accountability of each structure. Particularly on the side of the DA, as they make decisions on funds that are supposed to be allocated and dispersed, but there are no clear responsibilities on their part for accountability in terms of those funds. And this is something that will be looked at in terms of the proposed amendment that will come through to this committee maybe during the course of this year. There's also a problem that also impacts on the optimal distribution of the funds, that is the definition of the office bearer, which actually Vivek spoke about, the delays there that were experienced at the time. So it impacted negatively in terms of the distribution of the funds. That's why we're sitting at the time with the surplus in the funds. I've already mentioned the relationship between the minister, the board, and the DA, that we need to clarify the roles clearly there and the levels of accountability, because right now in the legislation, sometimes the role of the minister sometimes is clouded with the role of the NLD, for example. The discretion that the minister has, sometimes that discretion is subject to the board. So we picked up some of those problems that we thought they were not intended, and we checked also with the previous author of this legislation to pick up some of those problems. The other problem that we spoke about, what we speak about, is the lack of direction or directive for adjudication. That is the guidance that is required for the distributing agencies. That is that direction that the minister must issue, which we have actually done late last year, and we published a notice in that regard. One of the concerns, again, was the compulsory requirement in this application form, whereby the first-time applicants, they are required to produce the audited financial statements, even the first-time applicants, when they have never, they have never received any grant from the board, but they are required, when they make applications, to produce audited financial statements. We thought that it is unnecessary, because some of these small organizations, they actually do not have. I mean, if a new NGO, for example, has just established, and it may very well have a very good initiative that they've come up with, but then they do not have the ability, maybe at the beginning, to actually come up with the audited financial statement, and the rationale for it, we couldn't see what is the rationale for that, because you've never utilized the money, you've never been granted the grant, so why do you have to account in terms of the audited financial statement that is required in the form? So we thought this is something that can be rectified by way of regulations, because initially it was not there with the previous regulations. But the changes that were made in the regulations in 2005, it came up with this requirement. The other thing that we thought it will contribute positively to the optimal distribution of the funds is if there are educational campaigns assisting the communities in terms of putting together their applications and understand exactly what is required, so that if we do these outreach programs and explain to communities what is required, in terms of making applications and how they can make applications, we thought that would be very useful. This slide really, it proposes a possible solution to the levels of accountability that are required in terms of the bodies that are recognized in this legislation. As it says, it's the NLB that is entrusted with the administration of the fund, and is accountable to Parliament, and also to carry out the fiduciary duties in terms of the PFMA. We thought that the distribution agency, as a body that is established in terms of the national legislation, they could also be subjected to the same requirements of the PFMA in terms of accountability, because they also make decisions in terms of the utilization of the fund, where the fund must go, where the fund should be spent. You know, they make decisions to say, this is the applicant, the applicant, or so much money must be allocated or dispersed to this particular beneficiary. So we thought, because they make such decisions regarding the utilization of that fund, they should have a level of accountability, and they should also account in terms of the PFMA. This is just a proposal. There could be other proposals that we can look at in order to deal with the problems that are experienced currently between the different structures. As a result of the concerns around the levels of accountability and corporate governance issues, the NLB established the oversight committee, so that it can, effectively that oversight committee will then, in a way, review the decisions of the adjudicative decisions of the DA, just to make an assessment, and sometimes they would say they would not implement those decisions pending information that they require for accountability in certain respects. But that also contributed a lot in terms of the delay and the finalization of the grant agreement and the disbursement of the funds. So that's the proposal there was that committee is not backed by the legislation. It has another layer, and it's not improving in terms of the the optimal distribution of the fund. So it must therefore be dissolved, and it has been dissolved. There's an agreement in terms of that through the subcommittee that is chaired by SGI. I've already touched on the requirements or the proposed solution that the GA must also account in terms of the PFMA as the body that is recognized in terms of the national legislation, so that we can alleviate the problems around accountability. So I would not spend time on that slide. In terms of the interaction and to improve the relationship between the three bodies that are recognized in this legislation and their functions, to carry out their functions in a cooperative way, we thought that there should be meetings that are held, maybe a statutory requirement for meetings that are held between the DAs, the minister, and the board. Even if it's two statutory meetings that are held per year, we thought that will assist a lot so that they take stock. But this is just a proposal, and it's something that we can look at in terms of the review of the Notary Act, which is something that the DDI or the project that the DDI is busy with at the moment. The definition of the office bearer, obviously there was an interpretation of the High Court in that regard, which that interpretation was then was narrow. We need to then look into that definition so that we make sure that that there are no different interpretations. So it's something that we'll consider when we look into the amendments to this legislation. I think we know the decision there that was made that the current definition does not. The judgment was that the current definition, it does not include the committee members as political office bearers. So it's something that we probably need to look at so that we avoid ambiguous interpretation. This session focuses on solutions that we think can be dealt with by way of regulation, so that we do not wait for the legislative process. Those solutions deal with the lack of the direction in terms of the channeling of the funds, and also relate to the compulsory requirements in terms of the financial statements and the educational campaign. In terms of the lack of criteria, there's a section in terms of the Act, Section 32, which then empowers the minister to issue a direction in terms of where the funds should be allocated. And the portion of the fund that should be allocated. And that direction was then issued and published in the Gazette in December 2009, and it's still open for comment right now. I'm not sure about the date of the deadline for the comment, for the public comment. But what we have done there was to also visit the different provinces just to make an assessment of the needs for projects that will fit into the sectors that are identified in the Act in terms of projects that will impact or have the developmental impact, and projects that are focused in improving the socio-economic standards in the communities. We have done that assessment. We have put together a report for the minister as the basis for the minister to issue the direction as to where the funds should be channeled. This is just the summary of the area that we have looked at and the proposal that we have made to the minister for channeling of those funds. And the notice in that regard is out there for comments. So we welcome any input that we receive in that regard. This is still talking to the criteria, and this is just proposing a percentage of 50% portion of the funds to be then allocated for those specific needs that we have identified in the various provinces for the initiative that are identified in those prophecies. And the date for closing of comments is the 5th of February. And the final publication, we intend to issue that by end of March. In terms of the compulsory requirement for auditor's financial statement, we think that there's no need for this for first-time applicants. And as I stated, it was not there initially, and there's a way that we can still monitor the utilization of funds for funds that are already allocated to the beneficiaries. And the Act guides us as to how we can actually do that to avoid possible fraudulent activities and the unlawful utilization of the funds. So we'll remove that. In fact, it's already part of the notice that we have published. In terms of the educational campaigns by the board, this is something that we encourage that the board should actually embark on the outreach program to educate the public on the requirements for applications, and also conduct some capacity building to assist in terms of the applications, what is required, how they complete the forms, and also maybe to improve in terms of the methods that they use when they make the call, so that the public is aware. Because some of them, they may not have access to some of the methods that we currently use. So we thought it's something that NLB can actually look at, and also perhaps use this community radio, so that people can gain access and know when to make applications for the grant, and also provide some training to some of the communities for making the proper applications, so that they avoid also the large number of rejections of the application. The other area that we'll be looking at is really to ensure harmonization with other legislation that talks to, for example, the requirement for financial statements of the audited financial statements, and that is in relation to the charities, for example, the Social Development Act that makes specific stipulations and requirements to make sure that what we do in terms of the Lottery Act is in line with other legislation that are applicable to these different categories. These are some of the pieces of legislation that we will be looking at as part of the review of the Lottery Act. Chairperson, this is the end of my presentation. Thank you.
All right, thank you, FPD, Deputy Director General. Members of the committee, do we still need any interrogation? Because I think that all the solutions are provided. But the second presentation, can you go home now? All right, honorable members, this is your chance, ne? Can you take a bit? I'll make an appeal. Each member can ask you two questions at a time, please. I saw Ms. Honorable Mabaso ask about five questions. Yeah, I will just have the first round, two questions, and then we also pass those of Honorable Mabaso, and they are still relevant for the NLB. Alright, I'll start with Honorable Andrikas, and then followed by Honorable Njegalana, followed by Honorable Swabaza, and last but not the least, Honorable Kumalo Mbowodi.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is to the CEO of the Lotteries Fund. I want to know, was there any response from your side or from the distributing agencies to the hardships endured and that were really increased during the economic downturn that this country experienced? Did you allocate more money, for example, to charities? Did you appoint more staff to assist and speeding up the applications from charities? That's my first question. Was there any particular response? If so, what was that? My second one is, I'm glad to hear that you've had a study done as to the impact of the money that you've disbursed. I want to differ from you, because my observation is not that all the money that you disperse has got a very low impact. As a matter of fact, I know of many non-governmental organizations, where that money has allowed a lot of volunteers to put their time and energy into these charitable organizations for free, to then, you know, effect immediate or great changes in their communities. May I just recite one example? The late Honorable Schmidt, who died in November, was a deputy principal at a primary school in the Free State. And with lottery money, you know, he told me, they developed sports fields at that school. And every year, hundreds and hundreds of kids benefit from almost a once-off allocation by the lottery fund. And that has also unleashed other money. You know, the fact that the lottery gave money, somebody else gave a little bus and that sort of thing. So if it's true that some organizations that the funds that you give have a low impact, certainly that can be brought into the criteria for the allocation of funds, so that you only give funds where the impact is highest. Your comments on that, I'll appreciate it if you could just enlighten us as to the impact of the funding and your feelings about that.
All right, thank you. Honorable Thabang, I see Mr. Honorable Jagaran has just left the room.
Yeah, Chairperson, I'm trying to follow your orders and have a limited number of questions. Slide 11 on the earlier documents that was that we dealt with from the NLP linked to slide 8 of the DTI with respect to the problems of auditing of the agency. I want to understand that if you're saying in your slide they are not being audited, and the DTI is saying in its slide here, as a way of suggesting an amendment, that an amendment should be put in place which would make them the agencies accountable, are you saying that there is nowhere, just in terms of legislation, nowhere at all where the agencies are being are accountable, and therefore are you suggesting they deal with the funds as they wish and nobody looks into their books altogether in terms of legislation? Because otherwise that creates a lot of problems. The second one is question is to the DTI, your slide 5. For 2008-2009, you're saying that the distributed funds are 5.4 billion. And available is 3.7 billion. It doesn't look to me the arithmetic is correct. Can you explain that? Chair, I'll rest my case for now. Otherwise, I have a few other questions. The next one is Honorable C. Kumalo. Before I give you a chance, I'd like to ask Honorable Babaza. You know, you're just complaining about the issue of auditing of the distributing agencies. You know, for the surplus fund of 6.2 billion, the fund is there. You know, those distributing agencies, they can give us that 0.2 billion as members of this committee, because there's no, they account to no one. They can give it to us and then amend the agency. Yeah, after that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
My first question is around the issue on advocating
that during the process of screening, what is the major problem that is usually encountered, which leads to the rejection? But linked to that question also, I heard lately that there is a huge rejection caused by lack of knowledge. As a result, the issue of training was mentioned. My question around that is that aren't maybe the call that is made once a year also be the cause of rejection as well? I mean, applicants not being given enough time to be looked at and ended up being rejected. I mean, that could be the cause, but I need to get my thanks to this.
Thank you, Honourable Line, and then it's followed by Honourable Jinghan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question will be to the lottery board. On the allocation and the spread to provinces, the professor said that most of the time the application does not meet the requirements, and or they don't understand the application form, or it's incomplete. My question is it only the people in Gauteng and in the Western Cape that understood the application form and complete it, or missed the requirements? But part of it was answered by the DTI when they said that most of the allocations went to the bigger provinces where there was more tickets sold. But because the professor said that most of the people don't meet the requirements, that's why I'm asking this question. And my other question will be, is it, do the lotteries board have a database of all the applications that is submitted to the board? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Jigaran.
Thanks very much, Chair. I also respect myself, but I would like to comment quite a bit after the question time, Chair, please. My question is, I hear mention is made of educational campaign. What I noted with the outreach program. The question I have to both entities, the fund, or the board, rather, and the DTI, has there been no such programs or educational campaigns in the past? If not, why not? If yes, if we could just get a little bit on that. The other area I would be keen on is around disability. I know the professor doesn't have any documentation in front of him, but if you could just share that. To what extent has there been any conscious focus on the area of disabled or responses or interaction, you know, that sort of thing. Just share with us a little bit around the disability. Otherwise, Chair, I think I concur with my colleagues. The inputs, both of them, are quite illustrious. Thanks.
All right, thank you, Honourable Members. I think the ball is in the court of the presenters now. We have a lot of questions. Our 15 if I look at my.
That's not my question. I will only answer questions that relate to the strategic direction of the NLB, the nitty gritty, the DTI is here, and the CEO is also here to respond to some of these questions. Maybe let me start by the first with the first question that was asked. There has been an induction. So the board has been inducted by DTI. Now the strategic session that I referred to, which the CEO also touched, is the session that will look at the current mission and vision of the National Lottery Board, does it tally with the current act that we are operating under? If yes, how can we make it more more elaborative to include some of the suggestions that are coming up from the DTR, so that at least we do our service in such a manner that is recommendable. And also to look at the structure that we have, the structure in terms of the organogram that we have at the NLB, does it answer all questions that legislators were asking time and again? If not, how can we make it very responsive to some of the concerns that members of parliament and members of the public are crying about, so that at least we align even our structure in terms of, you know, the delivery mechanism that we intend doing. So the reason why we need to have a strategic workshop, and also to deal with some of the issues that DTI has raised, the educational campaign, the turnaround times of, you know, the application, so that in that meeting we can come up with a consolidated approach how we can revitalize and change the whole National Lottery Board, so that it can be responsive to the needs of the communities. With regard to some of the initiatives that we have made, there are two or three provinces that have been piloted in terms of making sure that offices are open. Limpopo, Eastern Cape, they are finalizing the issue of making sure that the service goes to where people are, so that at least people do not have to struggle. But it is something that we need. It is something that we are still negotiating with the DTI, because as the department that we account to, we need to get clarity how we can do this. The incapacity existing in the organization, I think DTI came up with a very good mechanism, which as the board we are also looking at other ways in which we can allow organizations to consult the National Lottery Board for information. We are also thinking of making sure that people are free to phone to the NLB to ask and get more information in them on how to apply, when is the closing date, and what is needed. And this is, we are taking into consideration some of the initiatives that are coming up with, that are coming from DTI. Now, in the past, I think organizations were failing to approach even the offices of NLB, maybe because of the experience that they had. And as I'm talking, there are a lot of organizations that are coming to ask how they can access the funding and what is needed, and we give them those information. So the office of the CEO, the office of the chairperson, and the offices of the distributing agencies, as was indicated. Chairpersons of distributing agencies do have, separate, they do have offices where if there is a problem, an organization can come, the chairperson or deputy chairperson will go and sit and try to understand where lies the problem. Because our view, the view of the new board, is that the intention of this funding, or the intention of adjudication on the side of the DAs, should not be How best can we reject it? We need to change that mindset. It should be, how best can we assist that organization? Even if the application or even if the proposal is so weak, how can we help them? Not how can we reject them and remain with very few that that can scoop the whole money. One of the things that we are want to put in place, Chairperson, is that in the progress report, depending on our discussions with the DTR, in the progress report that is submitted to the NLV, we need to know how many women were impacted by that money. We need to know how many people with disabilities have been infected, and how many youth and how many elderly people were impacted with that kind of fund. Because we at the end of the day, we need to take stock so that when the minister asks us, the 20 million that you funded a festival which lasted for a week, how many South Africans benefited on that 20 million? So it's something that we need, we need to do. As I said, some of the questions, I think DTI and the CEO will try to get into the bone on how we are approaching that fund. And as I said, and which was also reiterated by DTI, the board is 2.5 months old, but we have already interacted with all the DAs. When they finish their adjudication, they send the form, you know, the file to the Central Application Office, and they also send the file to the chairperson of the board, so that if there are some other delaying tactics, when the chairperson of the board arrives in the office, he or she can make some investigation. Why are you not paying this organization? And the rest will bear witness that we have got organizations that have been regarded as the dormant files, but after the recovery of some of the documents, it doesn't even last for a week for that organization to get the response or to get the call that come and sign your grant agreement, which is one of the objectives that we want to put forward to these organizers today. Gone are those days that we will only rely on letters that must go to, you know, to go to Njaka-Njaka, where it may spend 2 months to reach that site. If there's a phone, a cell phone or a landline, why don't we call that particular organization to come and fill the grant application form in the office, so that at least even legal questions can be dealt with there? Because some of these organizations don't even understand the language that which is put there in the grant agreement. Very much legalistic. They may answer it in a very narrow and very shallow way. And when it comes here, you take it back to the very same organization. So we want to cut that red tape, bureaucratic tendencies that make these organizations to wait for so many months. Thank you.
The CEO can.
Thank you, Chair. There's been a few questions which are related to the provincial distribution, to rejection and training. And maybe we can look at all of that together. As Professor says, we started with a pilot project where we looked at the statistical distribution of the rejections. And we have now almost established, in one or two cases we call finalizing leases, in other cases we've already started to occupy these premises. But based on those rejections, we've got an office in Nelspruit, we've got an office in Polokwane, and an office in East London. And the purpose of these satellite offices is to do exactly that, is to help people on the ground, really, from those areas to fill in application forms and to understand what the requirements are. But I think the larger picture really is that if we want to be really effective, it has to be a very focused and targeted approach. Because in the absence of a policy for funding, it's very difficult then to draw that policy down to the actual rural areas to say where the education should be. Because take for an example, if the policy is to fund disability, for example, then both your training in the rural areas, the format of the application forms, the format of the advert, the language of the advert, could be targeted toward that particular objective, which is disability. At the moment, because the funding is so widespread, it's very difficult to achieve any sort of targeted impact in the areas under training. So effectively what would happen is if you want to do it effectively, is you would have to probably spend more money than you're disbursing going around and doing the training. So if the targeting, the funded focus was more targeted, it would be a lot easier to do more effective funding and more effective education. But certainly we've already started with the rural areas, and we started with these three pilot offices, and we're hoping to expand them, duplicate them in other areas. Some of the other questions is, why is the RDP zero? The Act says that a certain proportion recommended by the Minister must be put into the RDP fund or a fund designated by the Minister of Finance. Now, because the RDP is defunct, and we wrote a letter to the Minister of Finance about 6 or 7 years ago to say where must we put the RDP money, he replied to say that the Treasury really wasn't interested in the money, and then we should negotiate with DTI what to do with it. And so DTI then suggested that we reduce that allocation to zero until the Act is amended. And hopefully when the Act is amended, there'd be categories for health and education and maybe other categories that money would go. So that's the reason that fund is zero at the moment. The issue of the surplus and whether we have a strategy for using the surplus. As I said before, we as the board do not have any control over the flow of that money. I mean, the money flows because grants are made. We have no control over those grants, who they're made to and what amounts are made, how many applications are considered. So really the surplus depends on applications and on funding. So, you know, if there are more categories added to the existing ones in the new amendment, then obviously there would be more implications and more money would go. But at the moment, as we stand, we have absolutely no answer for how one could get rid of the surplus. Obviously, if you reduce the rejections, then you would be funding more, and some of that surplus would be eaten into. But as we stand, there's no real systematic or concrete way to say that we would be able to get rid of the surplus in a year or two. Coming to the question on specific responses again to the economic downturn, I think you have a session with the distributing agencies next week, and maybe this question should be directed to them, because again, you know, if there was a specific intervention for a particular economic period or whatever, that would have to be articulated by the distributing agencies, not that. Questions on impact? The good example that you gave about the school can probably be overshadowed by a few bad examples of schools that we've already encountered. But what we mean is that there is some impact, but the impact is not significant because it's not tied to a targeted funding focus. You know, some of the impact that you have is probably incidental, you know, rather than planned and targeted. So it all comes back to the funding policy. The funding policy is very precise and very focused, and it's very easy to achieve the impact, to measure the impact, and to be able to control it. Let's just have a look. The rejections, coming back to the question about the rejection, most of the rejections that we have are issues of non-compliance. The Edward would have criteria, and it would also have a list of the documents that need to be provided in support of the application. So many of the rejections are because the criteria has not been met, or the documents have not been submitted. So they're not really issues of merit where the contributing agencies look at an application. So a lot of these rejected applications don't even come to a stage where the merit of the application is even looked at, because it's been rejected on the basis of non-compliance. Coming to the questions about the DAs being audited or not audited, in the legislation currently there is no accountability, because essentially they're spending somebody else's money. They're spending the money which belongs to the fund, and the board are the trustees of the fund. So in terms of legislation, there is no way that one could come around this, because we've discussed this at length with the Auditor General, and he agrees that it's not his responsibility to audit the distributing agency. So anything that they do finds its way, as we've illustrated earlier, in the audited statements of the board, because they don't have their own audited statements. Now, obviously, the proposal from DDI to address this in the amendment is to have them as public entities, as defined by the PFMA. If that happens, then they would be audited by the Auditor General. But currently, as they stand, there is no provision, even loosely, in the Act for them to be audited or to be accountable. The issue of disability, Congress, is again, you know, that decision to fund is made by the distributing entities, and they do have a category which they set aside for disabled funding. If you look at the advert, it would say there, you know, that they would encourage applications from in a particular year or in a particular call for funding from for associations or organizations that support disability. And the sport also, specifically. Again, you know, it comes back to the policy. You know, if there is no overarching policy that says in this year or the next 5 years, you know, this is our funding priority, and then to decompose that down into programs, that does not exist. I think there was one or two questions for you. If you want to take that, I'll just go through my list and make sure we didn't get anything else. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to start off to talk about, I think there's a major concern here in relation to the monitoring and the targeted have campaigned to the community, or where money should actually be channeled. And I think the problem actually emanates in the different functions. And you'll see that as well in relation to the levels of accountability. For example, in the levels of accountability, you'll recall that this legislation, there's energy, there's the minister, there's DA. Now, in terms of the DAs, we're talking about the surpluses that are there, and we're talking about money that is not accountable, or from the other side, there's no level of accountability. And we think that is probably a problem. But if you look at the legislation, it kind of allocates that function to the minister. And if you look at it, how is the minister going to do that? Because then it requires the minister to do a continuous or constant monitoring, even of the fund that is already been allocated. But you have an institution such as the energy, which is the regulator in terms of that legislation, which could actually perform that monetary function. So how would the minister be in a position to do that kind of monitoring? Even for the minister to pick up cases where the money has already been dispersed and the money is not going to be utilized for the lawful purpose, or for the purpose that it was requested for or intended for. So the role of accountability in terms of the fund is sort of shared between NLB and the minister.
and then the VA, there is no clear function as to what is their level of accountability. So there's a problem there, and it's something that we say that we need to deal with. But in terms of the educational program and the targeted workshop and the capacity building in order to assist the communities, you know, in making applications and understanding, you know, what is it that they need to produce when they make those applications. We have discussions with the NLB because we think that it's something that the NLB, even now, they can actually go ahead and do it. We think that they can do it because from the side of the minister, for example, because the minister, yes, is allowed in terms of the legislation to come up with or to issue a direction where the funds should be channeled. But that function is in addition to what is already there in the legislation, because the legislation states very clearly how the money should be utilized. Because God is the DA, and the DA sits normally, and normally when they have their meetings for adjudication, they don't normally tell the minister. They do their work in terms of the act that they are guided by the act. But the minister may from time to time then invoke that section where they see that, you know, the money needs to be channeled in specific for specific purpose. But then even that, it would require you can't maybe sit in the office and say money is required there or they are initiating to different purposes. So you need some kind of assistance. Also through these educational campaigns, maybe from the regulator side, where then they can advise the minister, because they're also empowered in the act to then advise the minister on anything. So that the minister then can be in a position to say perhaps there's a problem there. Even if they've made an assessment in terms of the impact of the money that has already and dispersed to see the impact. And then they'll be able to say, here are the areas, minister. Then they'll put together a report, an impact assessment report that will be tabled to the minister, but also a report that will say, we have also identified these areas, minister. Maybe in terms of the notice that you've already issued, the direction that you've already issued, you probably need to amend it and focus on these areas, because through our campaign, these are the things that we have identified. So we're hoping that through that interaction, and through those educational campaigns, we'll be able to work like that and manage these functions better. And I think in terms of the 0% allocated to the RDP, I think I've already stated that we are revisiting that category, and then we'll see whether we need to add other categories, as in the area of education. But what exactly are we targeting in the area of the education? Do we want to have a fund that will actually come in hand, for example, in cases where there's natural disaster? I mean, if you have seen some of the schools in the townships and in the rural area, I'm not sure, I don't have the report, I'm not sure to what extent they actually benefited from the fund. If we're talking about the area of education or in some other area, Honorable was mentioning, for example, the impact in the free state, you know, in some, for some of the schools. So I'm just saying that it may be that once we revisit and review these different categories of where the money is supposed to be allocated, we could probably come up with a category where maybe there's an emergency fund of some sort, where maybe there's natural disasters in these schools in the rural areas, or in the townships where maybe money can actually be allocated, and maybe the minister can also make a direction to in that regard. But also we thought that if there's also a need to actually look also in the area of health, but not to duplicate the functions that are trusted with the Minister of Health, but to assist in certain aspects of that category. So those are the things that we would propose in terms of legislative amendment when we are using the different categories of the distributing agencies, and maybe remove the one that relates to the RDP. In relation to the, I think the question that was raised by Honorable Fabaza regarding the requirement for audited financial statements, I thought it was twofold. I think the first part was partly answered by Vivek. The other one, the other part that I thought you were referring to, especially in terms of my slide, is the requirement of the audited financial statement when you're the first time applicant. you need money, a small organization in a poor community, but you came up with a very good initiative that could benefit the community. But then you are required, before you could get the funds, to come up with an audited financial statement. And maybe it's a sophisticated way of doing it, because you don't know anything, and even to consult an accountant, you know, or an auditor to actually assist you with those things. So we thought that this actually contributes to the, you know, to the inefficient distribution of the funds, because it's a constraint, and we have seen a reduction in terms of the application by small organizations, because some of them, they cannot meet that requirement. So we are saying that there are other ways in the legislation currently that can actually impose, the minister can impose conditions to the beneficiaries of the funds, and the minister can actually disperse or propose that the disbursement be done in proportion. And also then when you account, that's when you can be required to produce an audited financial statement, but not as a first time applicant, and the legislation does not require that. So it's something that we say, why should it find its way in the regulation, when in the legislation there are proper regulatory framework to ensure that there will be accountability? That's all that we're saying, and we're saying let's remove it in the regulation. But there will always be that accountability, because then you've got the money that has been granted to you, you need to account for the money. So we've got those mechanisms in the legislation. In relation to slide 5, Honorable Chabaza, regarding the available funds and the figures there, I've already stated that these figures now are outdated, because the slide that was presented by Professor Zubek, it gives us the current size and the value of the fund, which stands at 6.2 billion. So these are the figures for 2008, so the previous figure. So I just stated that it's outdated. So the correct figures for the existing fund are the ones that are shown in the NLB presentation.
Your mic.
Can you further explain? You're saying the current value stands at 5.8. I understand you're saying now it's well over 6 billion. Okay? And you're saying 5.4 was distributed. And available is 3.7. Now, if you have 6 point something billion and you have distributed 5, there can't be 3.7 billion remaining still. Can you explain that? It should be something like 1 point something remaining.
It's supposed to be a million, I think, not a billion. There's the other figure, the 3.7 billion.
It's supposed to be 1. Yeah.
We've distributed 6.7 and we have 6.2, so in total the 10 years that the lottery has been there, it's generated over 12 billion. So the total since we started, revenue generated by the lottery is in the region of 12 billion. 6.7 which have already been distributed in actual cash, and 6.2 we're sitting with at the moment. And of the 6.2 that we're sitting with at the moment, 2.5 billion is already earmarked to beneficiaries. And as I said, about 1.5 billion is the current year sales. So that gives you an available figure for disbursement of just over 2 billion.
That isn't there. And I'm not very clear what you are saying. Alright, I think the problem here is that at that size, you are speaking about the size of the fund as of 2008-2009, and you put it at 5.8 billion. But then it says that the distributed cash is 5.4, so it cannot be 3.7 remaining. So if you can just explain.
It's an error, what you're saying, that it's not accurate, it should be reflected as 3.2 billion, because it doesn't reconcile. It's just an error on that one. And also what you're saying is that is an old, this is an old figure, because now the value of the fund is at 6.2 billion. as we are putting here, that in 2008, that's where it was seen. So these figures are kind of outdated, that's what I said, and then we can focus on the ones that were presented by NLP.
Thank you, FTBDG. But I think that we are now current, we are the new parliament. Can we have the current figure? Let us work with the current figure so that we know what we have to oversight. Because that one of 2008 is gone. Previous parliament, previous committee of the DTI. But also the brand new committee.
So, Chairperson, it is in one of the, we've already closed the presentation, but it is on one of the pages. So, and also, if you look at the annual financial statement that was submitted at the end of last year, you find the audited figure in there. But just quickly, that slide shows that the current value of the fund is 6.2 billion. And the money distributed thus far is 6.7. So if you look at the figures that are there, the 5.8 is now gone to 6.7, and the 5.8 is now gone to 6.2, the 5.4 is now gone to 6.7, and the 3.2 billion that's available is probably, if you take off the earmark figure for transfers, is probably right.
All right, I think that's like it deals with investment, That's why these figures are correctly stated. That's like why we are going to deal with the cost of distribution. That's like the one we call in the case which bank is saving what. And then I think the total at the bottom is there. Honorable members, I think that we have to appreciate the imposition made by the DTI plus the National Lottery Board. But I think that when it comes to the amendment of the categories, I think what is also still missing is the issue of crime prevention. Because I think that the fund must be able to respond to the circumstances in which we are living. We know that we have CPOs which deal with rape victims, violence victims, those people who are victims to that. I think that if we can expand the category to include those people in, because really those people, they need help, they need the support. That one is critical. And also what is also very good, on slide number 11 on the issues of the DTI, when they realized that the issue of allocating according to the provinces, really it was very wrong. Because we cannot tell us from the Helen line, because she was born in the Northern Cape, that... Yeah, exactly. That was born in the Northern Cape, the population is small, and then, but their needs are very huge. So really, we have to address that, because I think part of responding to the national priorities now is the issue of dealing with poverty. You go to the Northern Cape, you get a lot of poverty. You go to Free State, you get a lot of poverty. Limpopo, you get a lot of poverty. So you must respond to that. You must not go to the provinces which are well off. Therefore, you go to the city of Cape Town. It can generate its own revenue, whether to build its own infrastructure. But you go to Upington, you go to Springbok, you go to Kwakwa, you have a lot of problems, people living there, but the capacity of the area to raise its revenue to build its own infrastructure is not there. So really, we must focus on those areas, as you said, that we must align with the national priorities. Honorable members, do you still have any questions? Sure. All right, I'll start with Honorable Mabasa, followed by Honorable Njigalana, followed by Honorable Andrikas, and Honorable Babas.
Thanks, colleague. Just one question. The CEO has been, I want to assume that you have been part of the people that face the challenges as articulated. Am I right? Am I right there?
Yes.
So the challenge I have, you missed it off. The challenge I have is, do you think that as a CEO, I know that there are other environmental factors that may have slowed you down, etc. But a CEO is a very critical position that can make things to happen or not to happen. What is it that as a CEO
you did, you know, to overcome the failures that are articulated. I know that you are part of the solution as articulated, but I'm still worried that did all these things happen in your presence? What did you do, you know? But I'm saying this very constructively, because you see, if I don't say this, it's very easy for you to continue the way you had been doing. So I'm challenging you to have within yourself a paradigm shift. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chef. Well, number one, unless my concentration was a little bit lost, I did inquire as to previous activities on outreach work or educational program. But let's make sure that we see if there's anything that can inform us when go forward, you know. To what extent were there attempts to go out and show that those who deserve, you know, are made aware? I'm not talking about a school in fencing, because sometimes that's what would happen, because those have access to all forms of media. And I'm sure maybe, just to share, I'm triggered by the fact that just recently, in the recent application, I just decided to take a dive and invited the, you know, the board or the fund, I don't know which one, to come to my constituency. And believe you me, if you can share my email, you'll see it almost turned out a battle because of the reluctance. And thanks to Professor because his intervention made sure that his middle management behaves, you know. But thanks very much for your good leadership. So that's why you find that I'm coming back to this question. They did come at the end, thanks very much as well. And the NGOs and CBOs are quite there. The second one is quite a touchy thing. I see in the mural, particularly the one that divides N1, or M1, yes, that divides the east and west campuses of the west. There's a mural that talks about 11 billion. Rent is best. Now that's public information. Even just sort out that, you know, I hope, yeah, I'm sure I'm right, because I've seen 11 billion. Where does it fit in all the figures we are talking about? Sometimes people can be mischievous, you know. Maybe there's an explanation to that. It's actually very important. Chair, I talk and then I close up. I just wanted to share one or two things. One, it would be remiss for me if I don't concede that I'm one of the guilty ones. Because if I look at the National Lottery Board Annual Report of 2008, page 12 and 13, quite a number of things, recommendations have been listed there. And I'm asking myself, from what side of the committee in the previous year, how did you miss those ones? So that you could have taken them up. I mean, things like distribution agents are not audited, so it's not something new. So the finger at the time turned at the point as the bureaucrat, and I'm asking why did it happen, how did you miss it? And I'm raising that so that we make sure that this committee now doesn't miss it. It's a full page here, I mean, I don't have to go through it. And also the audit committee does express its concern that the DA decisions are not specifically audited by any authority, and we missed that one. Maybe one of the things we should ensure as part of that is to address the reporting format so that we can get as much information as possible. And another area which I would like the CI to look into and the board is the environment of or the ethos impact assessment. I know it's asking for too much, but I'm sure we can be creative enough to see if it could be in an extra or whatever, but a way of looking into that, that would be very, very helpful. Chair, at some stage, it would be nice
unless the AIDS are going to change, you know, the AIDS agency, just to interact even if they are shares, because there's been a lot of controversy around them. Unless things change for the better, very soon. My last comment is that I had mentioned I've made a role of chairs. Now, with my experience with times, I've appealed both entities, you know, the board as well as the NDTI, to look at when they do the whole refinement as to how they locate and define the role of chairs vis-a-vis any official, probably at the provincial or even national level, handling adjudication and whatever, whether full-time or part-time. Because history has shown at times, you know, once you have a lot of power, there is a risk of abuse. But in any case, let's see how that works out. It's very, very important. Just to reinforce Baba Mabaso's point, whether it's pointing at us or whatever, you know, as I was listening, I was just asking myself, how come the whole National Lottery Fund process proceeds without refinement all these years? Because the analysis that has been given by both Professor Ram and Mr. Sethi is actually very, very revealing, that we've been sitting on this problem and rather lethargic in addressing them for a very, very, you know, long time. And I really thank them for ensuring that they provoked us fairly enough, such that we definitely, from now onwards, assuming that there's going to be this whole legislative surgical work done, you know, that we definitely would ensure that there's a better program which will be resonating with the country's national priorities, such that the money would go to where it deserves. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Njigalana, but I see some of the issues, the issue of interacting with the DA. You know, every day I interact with one GA and we can't send that enough for me. That's enough for me. And then the other issue is the issue of the oversight, that's true. But I think that this is our work. I don't know whether the previous committee did visit the size of the GAs and the National Lottery Board. Because I think that's where it's lacking. Because you know, when you do oversight, you don't have to go to the CEO. Go there, speak with someone who's sweeping the floor, someone who's making the team get a lot of things. Someone who's in the front desk, you'll know a lot of things now, without even going up. So I think that as a committee must be vigorous now in this term, that we have to go on site and see what is happening. And then Honorable Andrikas, I think for the next one. To see. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just so that the CEO won't go home and say, well, nobody even bothered to ask the question on the regulatory function of the board. I remember a reference in the previous annual report where you've said that in some self-criticism, you believe that the regulatory function, to a large extent, is not fulfilled to the extent that you would like it to. That the number of site visits, etc., you would love to up that and to be more visible in that respect. If you could comment on perhaps the constraints and the backlogs there, whether it's just perception or whether there are real problems in terms of the regulatory function. And then secondly, why has there been such a sharp drop in the amount of the disbursements in 2007 and 2008? I see it has dropped every year with about 20% in value. If you could just inform us on that.
Honorable Kawasa, your hand was up.
Yeah, so that is why, you know, most of the topics I have been answered in the FOIA.
most of the questions have been answered both by the TCI and the chairperson when he addressed the new strategic approach, and some of the suggestions that Comrade Sisa was making now. And I want to express my appreciation to all three of them for that. Just one very specific question on slide 12 of the National Lottery Board. On page, I think you have it on page 5. With reference to people affected by or infected with HIV and AIDS, you obviously are distributing funds to organizations which deal with testing and counseling. I do want to know whether you also fund those that deal with treatment and care. I raise this question because in KZN, for instance, I'm informed that a number of hospices are about to close down because they are fund stressed. Do they also qualify? I raise this because I would assume, and I don't know much about them, I would assume that they are largely private institutions. Do they qualify for your funding as well? And if so, what would you say I should tell them when I meet some of those people who run these hospitals? Thank you.
Thank you, Kende.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll start with the last question first, then, so that I can end up with the question that is about what I've been doing over the last few years. I think that's going to be another lengthy answer. I'm afraid the last question, you know, I know that they fund HIV and AIDS programs and organizations, but I don't really know the specific details, because that would be something that the distributing agency for charities would decide, and from time to time that would change as well, but we could find that out and send it to the Comedy Club for submission onward to you. But certainly we'll do that within a day or two. Second last question, why did the amounts drop in 2007? 2007 was the year that we had the discontinuity in the lottery, so there was no money coming in, and there was also the compounded effect that there were two distributing agencies not appointed at the time. So there was a lapse of 6 months where there was no sports distribution agency, and a lapse of about 3 months for the other. So there was no distributing agency, no meetings, no adjudication. In the issue of regulation, can we just leave that one to a bit later? I'll come back to that one. The 11 billion that Comrade Sisa is on the wall in the tunnel there between the Brits campuses, it says 11 billion raised for good cause. So, I mean, and that effort is a year old, so it's now 12 billion, which we said is about the ballpark that we've received from the time that the lottery started. So it doesn't say this word, it says 11 billion, because that's a Gidani effort, it's not our effort. You know, they're taking kudos for the money that they've raised, so it's 11 billion raised for good causes. I'm sure that's what it says there. The issue of the outreach and the problem that you had, just to give you some background, you know, there's this issue that we have internal audit and expenditure and all of that is scrutinized by them. And when this, when the request came, internal audit jumped in and said, you know, when we do this workshop, do we know that the people that attend the workshop understand what the requirements are? Because if you have 500, as I explained in my email to you, if you have 500 people coming to the workshop and none of them qualify because of the stringent requirements, is it worthwhile having? I mean, that's just the kind of issue that we had, which I had to step in and say, look, I don't think this is an issue to make a prejudgment that we should just go there and do the workshop, and that's why it happened. But these are some of the issues that we need to address. Coming back to the question about my role as the CEO and what's been done over the years, just to give you a brief background, I was appointed to the first National Lotteries Board. So I was a board member on the first board in 1998 when there was no lottery. So when we met as a board, we issued the first RFP and we recommended for the minister to issue the first license. I became the CEO in 1999 because they had advertised for a CEO both locally and internationally and couldn't find someone suitable. At that point, the National Lotteries Board was purely a regulator, and the issues that concerned the National Lottery regulator was regulation of an environment which is highly technical. And I think you know that I have a PhD in computer science, and that was useful. I also have an MBA, so I understand management. So I was appointed as the CEO at that point. At the end of 2000, the minister gave us the additional requirements of supporting the distribution and the distributing agencies were then appointed. Now, because of the issues that you've heard, the dichotomy and the dilemma that we have about who is accountable for the fund, who actually spends the money for the fund, that is an issue for a CEO which is very difficult because for a standard CEO, obviously, your function is to plan, is to control everything that you can in the environment. Now, we're sitting with two organizations in one, and we only have control over the one, which is the regulation. So as a CEO, I can control what we do to regulate the lottery and other lotteries. I can control in the office what it is that leads up to adjudication. Who gets money, why they get money, why it takes 14 months for somebody to look at an application. Those things are not within our control. And so if you look at the things that are in our control, from the time that we started in 2001 distributing money, we've grown from an organization of 3 people to an organization of 120 people. We were forced almost to join the DGI on the DGI campus. And we were given one floor in a building where we were 40 people and we couldn't expand. Because there was no space on the campus, so we couldn't employ more people. We then wrote a petition to the minister and to the DG, and eventually the minister and the DG allowed us to leave the campus and get new offices. Immediately when we moved to new offices, we moved from 40 to 80, and now we are 120. So I think that those areas that we can control, we have. And one should also bear in mind that we're doing regulation, and regulation is quite a complex activity. In the UK, there are 75 people regulating the UK National Lottery. We are about 10 people that are doing it. It's almost a full-time job just to do the regulation. And also, you need to bear in mind that until the new board was appointed, we had an executive chair. So the chairperson of the board was a full-time staff member. He was there every day. And obviously, you have this chain, which is the board and the chairperson and then myself. So one does not always have the freedom to do what you are required to do. I'm not saying that that is an excuse, but certainly there was some constraints. I can say quite honestly with my hand on my heart to say that we have, as the National Lotteries Board, both the board, the chairperson, CEO, done everything that we can. I mean, if you look at what was raised previously, the annual report, there's a requirement. The Act says that in your annual report, you need to report all the things that you recommended to the minister to change. And from 2003, you look at that list. In 2003, we recommended amendments to the Act to change the way the DAs work, to change the way the funding is done, the application form, the fact that only juristic persons can apply. That amendment was drafted even and sent to DGI in 2003. 2004, there was some more amendments, and it goes on every year. Last year, in 2007, we sent the amendment for the political office bearer and the licensing process. So all of that is in our annual report as being interventions that the board tried to achieve through the department. So, I mean, that, you know, it's on the record. So I think that we have done everything that we could. And obviously, now we have a new board, we have some new ideas, and we have cooperation with the department. We have this forum. The minister is now involved. So I think we will start to see more change. But up to now, I think we really did quite a bit. I mean, we have distributed under those severe constraints we distributed 6.7 billion. We have not had a qualified auditor statement. So I think there's quite a lot to be said that, you know, in spite of the constraints, that we have some remarkable achievements that we are quite proud of. Thank you.
All right, honorable members. All right. So,
there was a question about the private organization from the honorable member there. In terms of the current act, you only fund NGOs, trusts, and not, you know, not family trusts, but community trusts and non-profit organizations. CCs, cooperatives, I know there are some discussions amongst the distribution agencies to understand the nature of cooperatives. Under the current act, you don't fund you know, those entities. Only you are restricted to fund the NGOs, NPOs, and trusts. And again, you know, having graduated from the distribution agencies, is that there are certain trusts that the dissolution thereof makes it a private company, wherein the dissolution clause will say, in the event where the organization is dissolved, honorable members will share 20%, 30%, 40%. So, under such circumstances, the DA will say, no, we can't fund this because in the event of the organization ceases to exist, people are going to enrich themselves and get this a lot of millions. So, it's just a handicap on private organizations that we cannot fund. Maybe just to bounce something to the honorable the August House. One of the things that in your monitoring mechanism needs to emphasize, and I think it also affects the board and DTI, advertisement of call for nomination of board members, call for nomination of distributing agency members. I think we need to be cautious. People who are conflicted should refrain from sending to entities like this one, because it is very dangerous for me to serve as a chairperson of the board, but I'm running an organization that benefits from the National Lottery Fund. Honestly, those of us who understand subjectivity, definitely if I am sitting with you and my organization solely depends on this fund, you will have that sympathy for me. You will have sympathy for my organization. So I'm just, this is just a personal appeal, and some of the things that I observe when I interact with distributing agencies, which might end up benefiting only the very few people, but neglecting the majority of those who need such funding. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Chair. CEO, you still want to come back?
There's one more question.
Alright, sure.
Thank you, Chairperson. This is a question on the regulation. Again, it's a difficult balance, to over-regulate, because, I mean, the company essentially is a private PGY limited company that is under license, authorized to run the lottery. The license makes provision for us to regulate various aspects of the business, marketing, advertising spend, responsible gambling, all of those kinds of things. But there is it's very difficult to achieve a balance between over-regulating and allowing freedom for them to do exactly what it is to do. For us, I think we regulate under what we believe to be regulatory imperatives, which are 10 areas. So revenue is definitely one that we do very thoroughly. We balance on a daily basis every single cent that comes into the national lottery. If it doesn't balance, then obviously we halt everything. We balance every draw to the cent, and obviously other finances. So where finances are involved, we do everything. Fit and proper is something also that we do very thoroughly. So everybody that works in the National Lottery Institution has to be fit and proper. So we check probity and all of those kinds of things. There are certain things that we regulate more on a probability basis. The retailers, for example, in the site visits. There are 8,500 retailers. And so we do them on a sample basis. Obviously, we can't visit all of them because they are scattered throughout the country. So we do them on a sample basis. And it's mainly to see that they're not selling alcohol, mainly to see that there is a big advert on the window that says under 18 can't play, you know, that the retailer understands the rules, that the retailer understands what he can do and what he can't do. So some of it we do on a probability basis, and some of it we do very conscientiously and fairly vigorously. And up to now, it's been working. There are some concerns with the lottery itself in that, because of the break that we had in 2007, we lost about R1 billion a year in sales. And we think those people in that gap moved to casinos and horse racing and bingo, and they haven't come back to the lottery. So the lottery effectively at the moment is selling probably R1 billion less than what it should. And that has a severe impact on the operator, because the operator is not as profitable as it would have been or as it was specified in their bid, based on the projections at the time. And that for us at the moment is a bit of a concern. And we're trying to, with the new board, trying to see how we can approach that. But other than that, I think we're fairly confident that we're regulating both comprehensively and sufficiently.
All right, Honorable Andrew, first, before I give the information.
Chairperson, it's my impression that you do not only regulate Kidani, but also any other applications for people that want to run lotteries. Will you please expand on that as well?
The Act makes a provision for the National Lottery, which is run by Kidani. And then there are other lotteries that are specified. So there are society lotteries. For example, if the community chess wants to run a raffle, the board can then insist on them giving us a model of the competition so that we can understand where the revenues are going. Because a lot of people are setting up these competitions. And then 80% of the revenue is a management fee to a group of people that are running the competition, and 20% is going to a charity. A good example of this is the Winnie Kaya competition that was advertised on TV, which we then took to court and we won on appeal. And essentially what was happening there is that, you know, people organize this competition. They have very glitzy adverts on TV. People send in SMSs. They make a fortune. 80% of that goes to the people running the lottery as a management fee, and 20% goes to the people. So the board then has the authority to stop those competitions. There are also promotional competitions where, and in terms of the Act, the promotional competition is something that you can only run to promote a product. And that competition should not make that product any more or less costly than it was before the promotion. And a good example was the F&B competition, where they were running R1 million a month. And they were saying that they're not charging for anything because, you know, it was a free investment. And eventually when we took it to the appeal court held that it was an illegal competition. And at the moment, the asset forfeiture units are trying to recover any money that they made through that competition, because it is now gains of an unlawful act. So, but we have our hands full, because there is all these SMS competitions that you see. I mean, you know, when you watch TV, SMS something to some number. We've actually approached the Vodacom and Cell C and all the cell phone companies, and they tell us that we make R100 million a year from this competition. It's going to cost us R3 million to keep you in court for the next 2 years, so, you know, do what you want. Now, there's so many of them, we can't really do anything. We've been to ICASA to say, listen, you know, this is aiding and abetting an unlawful competition. Can't you do anything under the license? But as we've seen from the recent communication committee, ICASA doesn't really have the teeth to to stop some of these things. So we have a bit of a dilemma there, actually. But those are some of the other competitions that we regulate as well.
Thank you, Paul. Okay. Paul, can you please chip in before we close it?
Yes, Sam, thank you. So I just wanted to make a mention of an important assessment that we did, just to echo as well your sentiments that there's a need for us to actually go out to the communities and do these assessments. For us to be able to develop the directives that we've issued for public comments, we did the need assessment within all the provinces where we met with traditional leaders, members of the public, the NGOs, and so forth, so that we could get a sense of what are the needs within those provinces. And also linked to Ms. Lynn's comment that large amounts go to the most wealthy provinces, it was so that we could address that issue, that we balance where the funds go and we are able to channel them to the provinces that really need those funds. And Northern Cape was also one of the provinces that we consulted with. I just wanted to make mention of that, that the regulations themselves emanated from those need assessments visits with the different provinces.
All right, honorable members of the committee, I think this meeting is coming to its end now. But as the chairperson, I really have to appreciate the presentations which were given today. Really, because they went to the core of the issues which we raised when we interviewed the candidates for the board. And then what is also good is that already some work has been done to address those very issues which we raised last year. But what is also going to be critical here is that you can see that there's a lot of legislation amendments which must be made. The issue which then goes back to the State Department of Trade and Industry. How quick are you going to respond to this? Because apart from those conflicts which are having between the National Authorities Board and the DAs and plus the minister, really, I think that you must move with speed. Honorable Njegalana raised it correctly that we've been sitting with this thing for so many years. I think that this brand new committee, it was the previous committee of trade and industry which dealt with those problems. I think this brand new one, now you can see these members are brand new in this committee. They are going to run with these issues. So we'll appeal to the department, really. Give us a time frame. When are you going to put the legislation in place to bring it back to Parliament? Because apart from this lottery board legislation, there's also harmonization which you said must be done. It means that you have to consult the social development, you have to consult social development and then PASHA, the people who are dealing with PASHA, to deal with those things. So I think that if you can give us some sort of an action plan as a department, how we are going to respond to this thing, because we cannot have in a democratic country like ours that we can have a conflict of interest, we can have lacunas in the law itself. Man. So I think that we must have to speak. Some of the questions, although I allow them, I thought that they tended to be too personal. But what we do is that as this committee, we are going to become partners with you. So we must know what you are supporting. We appreciate the way Prof. you have responded to the issues raised by Honorable Mabasa. It was not malicious, but it was the issue to get to the core. Now we understand it. You are new in this parliament. You know, that's why he's so energetic, he's so vigorous in raising issues. Man, he's very new. He has to understand the whole thing. That's why I allow him to stand. But it was not personal. It was the issue of getting to the root causes of the problem. So that when we support, when we move forward, we know what we're dealing with. So we really appreciate your input. Appreciate the input of the members. The questions which were raised, I think that they have filled you. So you are coming back out of this meeting as better people. So that you know what where to zoom in as you're doing your work. So it's really appreciated what you've done. And then, Honorable Andrikas, you know?
I would like to ask whether you would allow me to propose a motion for the consideration of the committee today on the National Lotteries Board. An alternative would be for us to also consider it once we meet again next week. No, not next week, we'll only apparently be the week thereafter. But I want to propose a motion that will inter alia congratulate
the new board members and especially the chairperson a motion that also calls on the DTI to serve us with amendments to the etc. Your guidance will be accepted here.
All right, Honourable Member, I think it's correct. Let's do it in the next meeting so that we can have a time to consider it as a committee. Yeah, I think it's a good one, but I think that let's have time to look at it in that. Honourable Members and then the delegation from the National Lutheran Board and the members of the Department DTI, your work is highly appreciated. Continue doing this work steadfastly so that we can make a better life for all the citizens of this country, in particular in the deep rural areas. I think you can see that there are a lot of challenges there. Let's take anything which is an impediment to raise the standards of living of the people from these areas. Let's work it thoroughly. Thanks a lot for attending this meeting. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.